WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives. One moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
You can't live in America and not know Bill Cosby, from his television show, his records, or the many commercials in which he appears. Critic at large Laurie Stone recently saw Cosby perform his stand-up act at Carnegie Hall, and she has this review.
The first thing I notice is that there aren't a lot of black faces among the fancy dress audience. Orchestra tickets cost $100, and the cheapest seats are $35. Most of the ushers, wearing short red jackets, are black, and there is Cosby, who looks great in a beautifully tailored tan suit. At 51, he's no longer jockish, but he's vigorous and prosperous-looking. Still, there stands a black entertainer before a sea of rich, mostly white faces, attended by a service staff that is mostly black. What are the options? Richard Pryor would dive into the race study, taking the skinny boy license to draw blood and plead puniness. He'd be vicious, hilarious, tilting the minstrel format of race humor to his advantage. The pain of being made to feel insignificant because of color continues to burn in him. Eddie Murphy, on the other hand, wouldn't expose that vulnerability even if he felt it. He'd use the occasion to show off his shrewdness, display his amusement about white anxieties, demonstrate who's in control and being entertained. But Cosby doesn't say a word about race, not one. There was a time when Jewish comedians, I'm thinking of Jack Benny and George Burns, didn't comment on their backgrounds. They worried about anti-Semitic backlash. And when a later generation of Borscht Belters came up, it was a sign of liberation to flaunt their ghetto origins. But a black person who looks black can never elude ethnicity, and Cosby knows this. Whenever he shows his face, he presents an image of blackness, wealth, and professional success. That combination adds up to racial pride, and it's given weight by Cosby's recent $20 million donation to the women's school, Spelman College. He's also conscientious about hiring minorities of varying backgrounds for his show. At Carnegie Hall, he signaled to the audience and to the black ushers that some blacks have made it so successfully they don't have to call attention to race, and he pulled it off. As for his comedy, it's uneven, though Cosby can still milk charm and wit from the oldest business in the book, wife jokes and toilet humor. He says his wife protests the way he arranges her uncomfortably in bed, supposedly out of love, and when he farts, she tells him to shut up. Like Rodney Dangerfield, who puts wise barbs in the mouths of women for whom he pines, Cosby lets his wife articulate what we've seen in his persona and what he occasionally shows on his sitcom, a tyrant who wants to come off cute. But Cosby repeats himself shamelessly and remains focused unswervingly on domestic life. His egotism, though mocked, eventually takes over. He imagines that the force of his personality exempts him from shaping his work. His aggression against his wife, who is always my wife and never Camille, subsumes the advantage he ceded her. She begins sounding bitter, the jealous second to a great man. When Cosby's motives are honest, he's funny, and not merely about himself but about human nature. Too often, unfortunately, the observant part of him isn't after change, just buying more time to go on being what he is.
Laurie Stone is a New York-based writer and critic and is a contributor to The Village Voice.